Hi, team. Welcome to the Escape Podcast for Star Wars The Old Republic. This episode, we'll walk through the first half of the Dread Palace, we'll cover our weekly Galactic Starfighter tips, and we'll release another unsubstantiated and dangerously inaccurate rumor about the game. We have an insulated astromech here to record this and withstand the chill of deep space to get this to you. Are you all warmed up, EPC-20? What? Freeze before you reach the first marker? Fine, here, get inside this tauntaun. That'll keep you warm.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, of course I know what the temperature is in there. It's lukewarm.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Hi, Seema. How's it going? What have you been up to?
It's going really well. I mean, I have to say, EPC-20, it seems like we're just doing EPC-02.
It seems like we just kicked an EPC-02 out the airlock.
Yeah. Well, let's see. What have I been doing this week? Starting with ops. We actually ran afoul of the DDoS attack last week on Wednesday, so we did not get to finish out the night. We managed
Thursday,
to kill the first three bosses in Dread Fortress, but then we were lagging and disconnecting so much that after re-logging in a few times, we called it a night. And then on Sunday, we did went ahead and finished up Dread Fortress and then did a run of Dread Palace. Both of those are on story mode. So we didn't get a chance to, just time-wise, we didn't get a chance to do our thing, which we normally then we go back into Dread Fortress and start wailing away on the hard mode versions of those bosses, but not this week. And what else have I done? I also started up a Sentinel because I have one character slot left, which she has my old name that I lost in the server collapsing. So now I have a character named Seema, and last few weeks I've been thinking about what character to, you know, what class to play.
Right.
Yeah, so I made a little chart today to see kind of which I had done the least of, and I decided that even though I do have a jug that I haven't finished leveling yet, I decided to roll up a Sentinel. So I'm going to be leveling her, and I've already been having some fun flying around all over Korriban. I just love that move where you fly at the mob and whack them on the head. So I think
jump
it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Swing two lightsabers around and just wait till you get double lightsaber throw. That's pretty cool too.
I want two lightsabers. I'm like, she's level 7, so I haven't gotten that far yet, but I'm really, really close to finishing up all the achievements on Belsavis, which would be my first completely completed planet, well, except for PvP. So I'm just sort of bit by bit killing all the mobs I need to kill on Belsavis. I have like 2 achievements left to finish. And that's just something I do rather than running circles around in the fleet. Like if I'm in vent chatting with people or whatever, I'll log in and go kill stuff on Belsavis.
Okay. Yeah. I have not gotten into those planet achievements yet. I'll take a look at those.
I don't know why I started with Belsavis. I think I didn't want to go. I'm less interested in, I don't know. We'll see. I think the next one is going to be, the Sentinel, leveling her up. I'm kind of trying to keep it, you know, eyes on the prize. So when she's doing quests and stuff, I know which achievements I'm trying for. So I know she needs to kill more Chirax and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
That makes a lot of sense.
With other characters, when I was loving them, I always kind of did the minimum, you know, like how to get the quest done to get the quest experience, because that's the bigger chunk of experience. Now I'm sort of, you know, more focused on killing the things and finding the lower objects and stuff. So it's just a little bit different twist on leveling. Reading wise, I started the Well of Ascension by Brandon Sanderson, which is the second Mistborn book. Remember, I had finished the first Mistborn book last week. I know I had planned to slip a Neal Stephenson book in there first, but I'm not always in control of which books actually get started. So it turned out to be The Well of Ascension.
And what do you mean by that? You're not always in control?
I don't know. I was, you know, I was clicking on them in Audible and I was like, which one am I downloading? Oh, it looks like it's that one, Well of Ascension. So
Is it like the Hypnotoad takes control of you and forces you to go a certain direction, or
it's partly
the Overlord's
because it's
command?
It's a continuing of a story that I was interested in, so it's kind of hard to resist.
Yeah.
But I will get back to the Neal Stephenson because I'm looking forward to that too.
Excellent.
Oh, also, thank you to everyone who let me know that there already are achievements for HK and Treak. They're actually very easy to find also. I just miss them. They're in the general section under companions, under achievements, but also in the part where it lists out all the classes, there's a section called shared, which lists them out too. So now whenever they add more shared companions, they have their own little spot to go in the achievements. So.
Yep. Thanks. A couple
does that
people
count,
pointed that
does
out.
Does that count
quick.
As an unsubstantiated and dangerous rumor if I say, oh, maybe we'll have more companions?
Sure. Sure, that's a good one. We'll put that out. But it has to. We'll have to think of something really crazy, like the companion will be a rock or something.
An Ortolan.
It has to be completely insane. So, what have I been doing? I have been hanging out in near Hoth-like temperatures in real life. It's
been
12 degrees.
Oh my gosh, it has been so cold.
Not 12 degrees, what did I say? It's been negative 12 all day here in the Chicago suburbs.
Oh,
for the past 24 hours, basically, which has been amazing. It's fun. You go out and you walk on the snow and it crunches in a weird way and you can't breathe because your lungs will freeze. And
let your skin touch the air because it just hurts.
I know. I my tongue was stuck to a flagpole for like a half hour.
It was really not.
So cold. In game, I've been doing some more Galactic Starfighter as per usual. That's been going pretty well. Machia has been doing 10 times more than me, of course. He's over 400 matches, I heard, as of even a couple days ago. Machia did an interesting thing. He switched over. He's been doing the Strike Fighter pretty hard just to try it out. Everybody's high on the Flashfire Stang and the Scouts, getting a lot of being able to zip around and get a lot of kills. And get a lot of achievements and things like that. Get some medals. He switched over. His experiment was, well, is that just because people are most comfortable with it and that's where they started and that's what they have unlocked? And his conclusion is yes. So he's been able to take the Strike Fighter, learn it, upgrade it, get comfortable with it, and he actually hit his first 15 kill achievement a couple times in the Strike Fighter this week. So.
Oh, nice.
So for everybody out there thinking that you have to be in a gunship or a scout to be able to be doing one of those upgraded scouts to be able to be doing the big damage and the big medals, that's not true. You can certainly do it in a Strike Fighter as well. It is a different play style and you need to get used to it, but it's pretty cool.
Nice.
As you said, our Thursday op did get all screwed up and we just cashed it in and did some stuff offline for a little while, but the ops yesterday did go pretty well. We cruised through those places. We didn't have time to get into the hard modes, as you mentioned, but it was fun and something we'll be able to talk about today in our segment.
Yes.
Oh, and one thing I wanted to mention, I don't remember when we did it, but we were bored one night and we've been planning on doing this literally for months, probably since there was an Astromech O2.
So. At least for 20 weeks.
But we wanted to take our HKs and go into the Foundry with both our HK companions out because there was a rumor that if you had your HK companions out, that they would interact with or talk to HK-47 and your HK-51s would interact. Well, we did it and they don't. And it was anticlimactic.
They do their normal... You know, their normal dialogues.
Yeah, they say their stuff, but and
yeah,
he says his stuff,
they are kind
of
talking smack, but
I guess
nothing different.
No, nothing different. And our HK companions pretty much soloed that whole fight in any
right.
of the instance that we stopped, and it was pretty amazing how much you can just walk around being high level though, walking through there.
I know we had to actually poke things to aggro them. It was pretty funny.
Let's see, what else did I do? I did, this must have been Saturday. I did Mythbusters Star Wars edition was on. It was their season premiere of Mythbusters, and they did a Star Wars episode, which was pretty cool. So they did three myths, Star Wars myths, that they challenged. One was where Luke and Leia swing on the grappling hook in episode four, where he grabs Leia and they swing and they're hanging out in the Death Star. The other one they did was the second one they did.
What do you mean
was,
they did? They tried to prove it didn't happen?
They test to see how plausible the stunt is.
It's completely plausible.
That one was relatively plausible. But only plausible, not confirmed, because getting your little grappling hook, it took them like 20 tries to throw a grappling hook and actually get it to lodge there. He attaches it to his belt, and that was like, it nearly killed Jamie Hyneman, who was doing the stunt, to have just a belt and be hanging all of your weight on a belt. It sort of nearly broke his ribs. And then, so he had to switch to an actual stunt harness to get it completed. But he said, okay, fine, it's plausible. In a life or death situation, it's plausible.
So basically what you're saying is he's no Han Solo.
I guess not, although he did dress up like Han Solo, which was
did he?
pretty hilarious.
That is a funny touch.
The second one they did was the lukewarm Tauntaun. So they said, in Hoth-like conditions, would putting somebody inside a Tauntaun, you know, be a good idea? Would it actually keep you warm for the time that it would take Han Solo to put up the shelter and build an ice cave? And that was confirmed. So they did this really elaborate whole arrangement of creating the Tauntaun, you know, basically blubber insulated sack carved out of foam with fur so it looked like a Tauntaun. they went into like a food storage unit, and they lined this food storage unit with dry ice, and they were down about negative 35 degrees Celsius. And then they put this stunt dummy that they had rigged up, made out of ballistics gel and copper tubing, with fluid that pumped through it at the same metabolism rate as a human heart, with a small enough heater that matched the human body, and they wanted to see if it would drop the core temperature of the dummy ultimately inside the Tauntaun faster than it would take to create to put up the ice cave or whatever. So they gave it like 2.5 hours, and it stayed warm. It stayed warm enough. So that's confirmed. Inside of a Tauntaun is lukewarm.
That was wise of them.
And then the last one they did was those two logs that in episode 6 that smash the armored walker unit on Endor when they're fighting the Ewoks. So the two Ewoks chop the cord, and there's two logs come slamming down and crush the thing in the middle. and they built that with these giant logs, and they smashed an armored car. It was awesome. So anyway, that was cool. I'd recommend going and watching it. And that night turned into me and my kids watching episode 5 and episode 6, both in as a movie marathon, because got all excited. So it was cool.
So basically, it's all true, Star Wars, based on Mythbusters.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely true. Yes.
I mean, I got to believe there's a pretty good overlap between the audience of Mythbusters and Star Wars geeky type. So
I think they were wise.
Absolutely.
I thought it was awesome, and my son, my 17-year-old son, couldn't wait to watch it. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
So I guess just to round it out, I'll give my book update. I did finish Throne of the Crescent Moon by Saladin Ahmed. That turned out pretty well. It was a good twist on that kind of genre in general. And I started book one of Mistborn.
Uh-huh.
So I'm only like 15 minutes into the audiobook. But I realized as soon as it started playing that it was narrated by Michael Kramer, who narrated all of the Wheel of Time series. So,
So you're already intimately familiar with all his talents.
Yeah, and I very much like him as a narrator, so he does a great job. So the Audible version that they have posted is Michael Kramer, which I recommend him as a narrator. I like it. So I'll be happy to continue to listen to that. And it's, as I said, I've only a couple minutes into it, but it was going pretty good. So I'll be excited to listen to more of that as the weeks go on. But for now, we have some news to get into, and of course...
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
So we don't need to say anything more about it, but there was that DDoS attack on Thursday, which was a little bit ridiculous. You know, I don't know why that needed to happen, but apparently it did. So there it is.
Yeah. Also in the news, we have a new community team member by the name of Tate Watson that was announced today. And there's some posts and a thread on the forums that you can go and read and learn more about him. Apparently he's been playing SWTOR since launch, so he is familiar with the playing side of the game, which is always good. He's going to be doing probably all of what Amber was doing, but they definitely called out that he'd be gathering information for the development team through bug report and the forums. So he'll be working on that. Yeah, so last week, you know, we heard that Amber was moving on to another position in BioWare, and this week we get her replacement. So there it is.
That's cool. So be interested to meet him more. He's posted a couple things. We're getting to hear a little bit of his side of how things look. And yeah, welcome Tate. We'll love to meet you more through your work in the community group. And one of the ways you may be able to see Tate is one of the Cantina Tour stops is coming soon to Phoenix, Arizona on Friday, January 31st. That'll be their next Cantina Tour. If you have a chance to go to one of those, I do recommend it. They'll do a couple more this year. They're planning on going to New York. I went to the one at Chicago and had a good time and did get to meet Eric Musco and Amber at the time. And it was great. The most fun I had was just meeting other players from the area. There were some guys up from Central Illinois. And it was, I wish I could remember what server they were on. I wrote down a couple of their names, but they were some good guys and they were fun to talk to for that evening.
Sweet. And in AIE news, SUP, our ops team, Sith with Unlimited Power, is moving to Wednesday nights. And that move has facilitated them getting to a full roster. Yay! So that's good. That means our 16-man that we normally run on Wednesday nights, or had been running the fun runs on Wednesday nights, we're going to be dreaming up some new night, and you'll hear more about that probably in the next week or so. And we have a new, new feature in our forums, which is called Ask a Guildie, which lasts for a week. We were doing it all last year, but it went on for a month, but now we're just doing it for a week. So this week, it's Droge. So if you have questions for him, anything is fair game. He doesn't have to answer them all, but yes. If you always wanted to know more about Droge, go to the forums and ask a question in the Guildie of the Week thread.
And not that kills matter, but Droge currently holds the record for Starfighter kills right now for our little squads. He got 21 kills in all the rounds.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, so he did a good job now. Or 20, maybe 20. It must be 20 because Makia says he needs to get 21 kills.
For
some random reason.
Yeah, unrelated, but random. Yeah, and random.
All right. Well, that is our news. We will continue our series of Galactic Starfighter tips. I got a couple quick ones for this week.
Do a barrel roll.
Let me start off by once again recommending the Utini Cast crew calculator. And the reason I'm doing it again is because the whole time I was recommending it last week, I was pronouncing Tio's name sort of wrong. I read it more than I remember that I listened to it. And they say it at the beginning of every Utini Cast, but I was sort of saying it wrong. Sorry about that.
You were saying it with a continental accent.
Teo, yeah, I was saying Teo, which
from your Spanish ancestry.
Yes, my Latin upbringing. This is true.
Yeah.
Couple tips for this week. One that came up over the weekend that people sort of realized. A lot of people knew. A lot of some people don't. When you capture a satellite on the map, currently on either side, the A or C satellites, you get an extra respawn point on that side of the map. So if you look when you start, you'll have another capital ship just even drawn in on the map. When you capture the satellite on that side, that capital ship will give you another respawn point. When you go to the respawn screen, you can click on that respawn point, and that's where you'll respawn from. So it gives
you
a little bit shorter time.
So you can get back in faster.
Exactly. A little bit shorter path to get back to that satellite. Another thing I like to use it for is if there's a lot of attack and action in the middle, and maybe you're flying a gunship, you can go to one of those side respawn points and come in sort of scoot around the side and not have to be going right back to the middle where you were the previous time and where some scout is just waiting for you to show back up again to pop you. So you get to sort of flank the enemy if you're going in on those side respawn points. Another idea to think about is coming soon, we'll have the bombers, and it remains to be seen whether they'll have them back in, but bombers did have an ability in the beta to drop one of those respawn points as an unlockable component. And as long as you defended that respawn point, you could respawn from wherever that bomber was defending that point, which is interesting.
That is a nice little wrinkle there.
That will be a strategy twist. We'll have to see how that goes. Bombers will be an interesting challenge because what you'll be giving up is extra weapons or damage dealing abilities. And I don't know how many people are going to be so happy to do that. So we'll have to see. The only other tip I was going to give out this week was something that most people know, but not everybody as well. It came up in conversation. When you unlock the multiple ability tiers, the top two tiers, say on your primary, secondary weapons, there's two abilities to choose from in each of those tiers. Keep in mind, you can switch back and forth between either of those abilities anytime. It's not like specking your tree for your main character. This is unlocking a tier and gives you access to either of those abilities at any time between matches. So you can flip back and forth and try different combinations of those, say those two tiers of abilities. And also keep in mind, you'll probably want to adjust you'll often want to adjust your crew and their passive and active abilities to match what you've chosen in those abilities. So I've done that a couple of times, especially with my cluster missiles. I went with the extra missile damage, which cuts your ammo in half, and then I gave myself extra ammo, which was the previous tier, as a extra ability. Well, then I realized I wasn't running out of ammo all that often, so I swapped it over to, I think it's greater distance on my missiles. And then I swapped back because I was still running out of missiles. So you can swap back and forth and see how it works out for you, which is pretty cool.
That does sound cool.
And with that, we will get to our segment, even though we've been yapping for quite a while.
Yeah, this is our yappy week, for sure.
Yes. So, way back long time ago, we released some Dreadmasters, didn't we? Well, if you were on the Empire side, you released Dreadmasters. If you were on the Republic side, you were fighting against it, but we released some.
Long ago, you sought to free us from Belsarvis prison.
We did seek to free them. And boy, was that a bad idea.
Really bad. We're sorry.
So now we've tracked them down in the Dread Palace, and we're going to fix our mistake. So you walk into the Dread Palace, and it's a scary place, isn't it?
Yeah.
That lump in your throat, it's panic. Think on what will happen next.
No, don't panic. It's not that bad of a place. So what we're going to do is break this into two parts since it's a big, fun, cool instance. So we're going to introduce it and talk about the first two bosses this week. Then you can tune in next week or download next week's episode. And we'll do the final two bosses and the final fight with the council. Let's kick it off. What do you think of this instance in general?
Well, I mean, this is actually one of my favorite instances of all time in SWTOR. In MMOs, I really do like it. The layout of it is you come in and you're in sort of this rectangular room with hallways out to the sides, the four sides, and then one at the far end. And you can, if you like, kill all the trash in that initial room, which is four packs, I think, which clears the way to the four hallways. And then in each hallway, there's two or three packs too. So it's not a lot of trash, but of course, you know me, I think it's too much trash. But each of those hallways then leads to one of the remaining Dreadmasters, because we've killed a couple of them at this point, right? One or two
right,
of them anyway.
Spoilers. So okay. So quick spoiler alert. We've killed two.
Yes.
We've killed two of the total of six Dreadmasters.
Right. So you get to fight the remaining four one at a time, and then the final encounter, you fight all of them at once, which is just crazy, which is crazy fun. But that's sort of the overview of the layout of the place.
Yeah, I agree. I really like this place. I like how it's laid out. I like the idea of going down each of those hallways. You do have to do them in order. I almost think it would be better if you didn't have to do them in order and you could just sort of pick and choose. You may say you had a couple minutes, you got your group together, you just wanted to do two, you could pick any two. That would be pretty cool.
I did not realize that you have to do them in order.
You do, because the first door opens up, and so like a hole gets blasted in the wall and the other doors are closed.
Oh, see, I just follow. I just thought that was our pattern. We always do Bestia first.
Yeah, no, but that's fine, because you're going to do them all anyway, because you want to get to the final fight. You're going to clear them all. I think I counted up 15 total trash packs, two on the way in, one in front of each of those doors, two in each of the hallways. So what do you have? What, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
that's
9,
11,
10.
42, 39.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 15 packs. You'll see a 16th pack before you get into the last door, but you don't have to do that one. So I think it's 15 packs. You do have to watch out for those trash packs, though. One of the guys has a reflect. One of the guys has a whirlwind, a mass whirlwind that whirlwinds your whole entire party. They're not hard, but they're
tricky. I like that, though. Yeah. And by the way, that whirlwind is dispellable.
And it's breakable with your free action.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
So if it's giving you trouble, you can have half your team use their PvP, action breaker on one time and dispel the other half. And
or
then
just
flop.
Wait it out. I mean, it's not like we've ever wiped on one of
no.
those.
No. Or just
we
wait
do,
it out, like you said.
Yeah. We do CC those guys and just kill them one at a time. Because they are CCable as well.
I like the droughts where we have to stand in the middle and they do a lot of AoE damage the whole time, like an aura damage the whole time.
Yeah, those guys are pretty hefty. And they are on they're down one of the hallways. So each hallway has, so as you get into each of the doors, then each hallway has two trash packs unique to that particular Dreadmaster's little lair. So what you're doing when you go down the hallway is you're going to meet up with one of the Dreadmasters in their little lair. So the first one you go to is Dreadmaster Bestia. And she says over and over, "My pets are legion, behold." And every time she says that, she spawns more of her pets. Well, there's a couple of the pets. They're the larvae type of pets and some tentacles and a very creatively named dread monster pet.
Yeah.
That you have to
I
deal
like
with.
That.
So Bestia, this isn't too tough of a fight. It's a good one to start off on. It's got basically three phases. In the first phase, her pets are legion. She just you smack her. She goes immune. She spawns her pets. You basically have to take her pets out. In story mode, there's only larvae and dread monsters, and you basically kill them in the order of larvae first. Then you kill the dread monsters. You have a couple tanks. One tank takes one or two. The other tank takes one or two. And you divide them up and you DPS them for a while. You kill some of them until she comes back down. And then in hard mode, you do want to keep them separated because they buff each other. The dread monsters buff each other when they're close. So you need to focus one down relatively quick. So when you end up getting three, you can peel one off of the other tank a little quicker. And you also get a third type, which is the tentacles that you want to take out the fastest because those need to be cleared. In phase two, then, when she comes down, she shows up and you start just fighting her. So in this phase, it's tank and spank on Bestia. She has a debuff that she puts on the tank. So there's a tank stop swap you have to deal with. And then she has two abilities that she's casting on random players throughout the raid. They're both sort of a red circle, so you need to be careful. One is actually a seed that she's implanting in you, a combusting seed, and then you get a red reticle underneath you, a red circle that spawns underneath your feet that follows you if you run around, because the seed's actually inside you. You just need to get away from other players because you're going to pop. That seed's going to pop in you, do damage to you, and it'll do damage to anyone else in that circle. So you get away from people. The second ability is called Dread Pool. That spawns under players' feet and just is a pool that shows up. The only tricky part, and this is what you were telling me, why don't you talk about that?
Pool is a pool of hurt. So you really have to get out of that. If you happen to also have the combusting seed, which is the red reticule, it's a big red reticule then on top of a smaller red sort of flaming circle. So if you have the seed, it's good to keep moving around so that you can tell whether or not you have the dread pool also. Otherwise, you'll just stand there and die.
Especially when you're standing in the water, I find the dread pool to be a little bit hard to see, a little bit fainter in terms of the graphics. And whereas the circle from the combusting seed is really bright. So yeah, if you just stand in one place, you may not notice that the dread pool spawned under you also. So be careful of that and don't stand in the poo.
And the longer the whole fight takes, the more mobs the tanks end up tanking, the more damage they end up taking, the less likely you are to be able to keep them up. And it's that kind of fight.
Yep. So smack those adds down as quick as you can. And then in phase three, it's basically a combination of the two previous phases and all of that stuff. So you won't get as many of the adds, but you will get the adds. And Bestia needs to be tanked separately from the dread monsters, because if she's close to a dread monster, she'll buff it. You still need to do the tank swaps. So you're going to be, one tank's going to be going to Bestia, the other tank's going to be picking up the dread monster. That's in hard mode. In story mode, it's not as tough. You just tank the boss and a couple dread monsters and DPS her down and clear it out pretty quick. But all in all, pretty straightforward fight in story mode. Minor additional toughness in hard mode, and a good kickoff to the first of the dread masters. When you DPS her down, she disappears and you'll see her later.
It's probably the most straightforward, most sort of classic kind of fight in the place.
Yes, I agree. Because the second one gets a little bit trickier, which is pretty cool. So the second one is Tyrannus, and he's got, this is one of my favorite ones, because I think that the next two are almost needlessly extra complicated, but still fun. But I like his room. So his room is almost, you can almost think of it as a chessboard with spaces missing. There's a bunch of tiles that are sort of hovering in the air, and there's a sort of this surface of tiles that you're all walking around on. He's up at the end of the room. He's waiting there for you. You're going to walk over to him. You're going to start the fight. He has a few different simple abilities, a couple different tricky abilities, and then the challenge ability, which is called the simplification, which starts getting rid of tiles and taking tiles out of the equation as you fight him. So it's all one phase. He just is periodically casting these abilities. So we'll walk through what those abilities are. But you can't fall off these tiles because unless you're pretty close to full health, you'll die. If you're not, you fall down, you're out of the fight. You got to run to, there is a teleport pyramid in the center of the area underneath where you can teleport back up. But one of his first abilities is called, so he's got a couple of abilities that he's just damage abilities. One's called Thundering Blast. It's the thing that sages do. And it's a frontal blast. You got to, the tanks need to make sure he's turned away from the raid so he's not shooting those thundering blasts into the raid. Because in hard mode, they do a ton of damage. They do like 20 to 25K damage. At the same time, he's also throwing out a dot. The dot's not that big a deal in story mode. But in hard mode, he casts it on two people and it can't be cleansed. And it ticks for 5.5K damage every 3 seconds. So it's a healer challenge, and if you get hit by the dot and the thundering blast and you're not the tank and the healers aren't focused on you, you're going to die.
Yeah. You can't see me, but I'm waving goodbye to you if that happens.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I said bye-bye. The second fun ability he does, which is a little more of a challenge, but not too tough, is something called Inferno. So Inferno, a red spot starts showing up on the ground underneath a couple random people. So it's a single person in story mode, and it's 2 to 3 people in hard mode. And what happens then is that red circle appears. You got to walk out of it because an inferno of flame shoots out of that red circle on the ground. So put it, you know, try to stand someplace where when that red circle shows up underneath the random DPS members or even under the tank, that you can deal with it and you can walk out of it. And that's cool. The third ability, which is the challenging ability, is the one called Simplification. So Simplification is the key to the fight. That's what makes this sort of a fun fight. He casts Simplification, and in story mode, he casts Simplification twice sort of per iteration. Once he casts it on the tank, and this is a good time for a tank swap. You don't have to, but it's a good time for a tank swap. And the second one he casts on a random person in the raid. Each person he casts Simplification on gets a red circle around them that's getting smaller and smaller and smaller over the course of maybe 5 seconds.
Something like that.
Whatever tile you're standing on when the radius gets to zero of that circle, that tile then lights up, and that tile is going to disappear in a couple seconds from then. So you need to run to a tile that you don't care about eliminating, and then you need to get off that tile once it sets to eliminate, and then that tile disappears for the rest of the fight. So it's pretty cool. In story mode, it's not that tough. You just need to be careful. Just get the ones you want to mostly get the ones around the edges, and you keep walking around. You usually sort of tank him, and then you move him a couple squares over because you eliminated the tank eliminated one of the squares. And in hard mode, there's 3 of the tiles that are getting eliminated each round. And because it's hard mode and it's taking longer for the fight, you have to be careful because you're getting 3 infernos and you're having to get off of those, and 3 tiles are getting eliminated each round, and you're ending up where you could get basically have the raid split on like 2 islands of tiles, which is all that are left, and they're getting smaller and smaller. It's it is pretty cool. I like that mechanic.
Yeah, me too. I like the mechanic. It's very fun.
I find it an easy fight as DPS. How do you find that fight to heal?
It's actually fine to heal. Once we got the hang of it, the first few times we did it when people were like falling off, and that was harder to heal.
Yes, that is harder to heal. And you fall off. Don't fall off. Although I did notice something. I watched a couple videos. If you stand like way on the corner of a tile with nothing off the side of it, and that's where you drop like Inferno, that's a great place to drop Inferno, because then 3/4 of the Inferno radius is actually off the tile and nobody has to worry about it. And so there are sort of strategies like that, and how to sort of march around in a circle and eliminate the tiles on the outside and make sure you're not cutting yourself off. But you really need to do it a couple times to see it and get the hang of it. Not as much as the next 2 fights, which we'll talk about next week, but that one is pretty fun. So Bestia, pretty easy. Tyrannus, a little bit more of a challenge, but still fun.
Yeah, I like both of them. But Tyrannus, I like a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, so do I. So, well, because his digs aren't as creepy and dark.
Bestia's room is all lava-y and dark. So it's like that dark,
slimy pools of...
Yeah, it's that dark stone color with the red lines, you know, yeah.
Yeah, at least the infernal flames of Tyrannus's room brighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, and it has the nice, decor. You know, the nice checkerboard floor, then it's really, you can see everything really clearly.
Nice tile. I like what you've done in here.
Yes, exactly.
But as you noted the other night, it really could use some sprucing up, like sofas, which is your favorite decorating addition that needs to be put into to ship customization, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly. Our ships, when we get a guild ship, we definitely need a sofa for it.
But I agree that, you know, so this is supposed to be like their lair, their place to hang out, their head office. And they're pretty drab places. You can see why those Dreadmasters are going a little nutty. So.
I will say that in that first fight, there is a little bit of an issue with line of sight because her throne is right, you know, in the middle of the room. And that throne does cause line of sight. So sometimes the tanks will take their various things they're tanking off into different parts of the room. And you kind of have to position yourself so that you can hit both of them. But, you know, what fight isn't like that, really?
So the throne is sort of in the middle of the room. I think, you know, I wasn't paying so much attention because I don't heal those fights. But if the tanks are a little bit, if you think of that as sort of like center and a little bit south of center is where the tanks are tanking on the two sides of the room, then you shouldn't have line of sight issues. So maybe Maki is just doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's it. Maki is doing it wrong.
All right.
I'm sure he'll agree with that assessment.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, he'll be really cool. cool with me saying that. So those are the first two. There's two more fights with two more masters, which are even more complicated, and they get more complicated. And then you get to fight them all again in the last fight, which is the council, including the force ghosts of the two that you've already killed. Spoiler, which is also a fun fight. But we'll talk about those next week because I think that's a good stopping point here. But
yes,
great instance. Yes. It's enough to split over two podcasts because we do like it so much. We're doing it all the time. So highly recommend it. Get yourself in there. Get legendary. Finish the quest for the Dread Fortress. Get your armor Tauntaun and then go into Dread Palace.
Yes. Do what Max says.
Yes. Do all the things. Well, little EPC 2.0 here is filled up and we are ready to go. Thanks for listening. For comments or questions, we can be found on Twitter at MaxTheGrey and at AIESEMA, or drop in on Jedi Covenant and ask us for an invite. Our character names will be in the show notes. For AIE Guild information, you can visit aie-guild.org or find us on Facebook or Google+ at AIESWOTOR. And we will talk to you soon.
Good night, everyone.